This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Looking forward to talking some Breeders' Cup Saturday after an exciting Breeders' Cup Friday. I said it on the Handicappers Report earlier. It's the Breeders' Cup. You had some logicals and you had some crazy results. And hopefully you cashed some tickets. I had a couple of things early that were, okay. And then late things kind of fell apart. Although I took a little shot with some crazy tries in that juvenile and ran first, third, and fourth in there. But again, hopefully you cashed some tickets. And the game plan is to keep it all rolling today. And as I say, we'll have some Breeders' Cup conversation. We'll continue our conversation with Nick Luck from NBC Sports. He's the European analyst. He'll give us some thoughts a little bit later on some of the Euros on Saturday's card. Steve Bick will also continue his conversation that started yesterday looking at the Friday card. He mentioned Sharing, who was the nice winner for Grand Motion at a nice price. I know our friend Mike Callahan liked that horse as well. So hopefully you followed either the one sheet Mike or listened to Steve yesterday on that one at a price. And we'll get some ideas for Steve on today's card as well. But we're going to start things out. And again, all of these interviews, we did them Thursday afternoon just because, again, with the Breeders' Cup out in Southern California, Breeders' Cup days are busy to begin with, but to reach into people at 7 o'clock in the morning is a little tough to do. So talked to folks on Thursday afternoon. Randy Moss was cordial enough to join us as well. Of course, the commentator for NBC. You'll see him on the broadcast this afternoon. So we talked with Randy about some of the action on the Saturday card and more. Up next, Randy Moss, NBC Sports. Randy, good morning.
Seth, how are you, my man?
Very good. Happy to talk to you and get some of your thoughts on the Breeders' Cup. You've been on the ground now for a few days. But before we do that, I was doing a little research last night. I was reading the transcript of the NBC Breeders' Cup conference call, and Jerry Bailey was bemoaning his travel from Florida, which he said was longer than everybody else. And you said, wait a minute, I'm coming in from Saratoga. You had an off-season visit to our neighborhood?
I probably, Seth, believe it or not, I spend more days in Saratoga during the off season than I do during the Saratoga race meet. There is a production company in Saratoga that's closely affiliated with NBC, and they produce all of the show jumping that NBC Sports Network does, NBCSN. And I'm the host of the show jumping for the Olympics as well as for all the lead-in events. And so I have to go voice all those on Church Street in Saratoga.
Very good. Yeah. It's well, since you come into town like that and you're an out-of-towner, give us where you go to eat. What's a good dinner spot?
Well, I mean, I am a big fan of Forno Bistro across the street from the Hilton on Broadway. I am a big Mexican food fan, and so I was just turned on the other day to a place called Cantina, which is right on Broadway, which is a pretty solid Mexican place. You know, you've got 15 Church is obviously a fantastic restaurant. I'm a foodie. There are all sorts of places. There's a brand new restaurant, Solera.
Saliva.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
It's outstanding.
The parents of the owners are in the chairs out on the paddock area every day. I see them probably half of the week. I wave to them. They come early and stay late, and they're always inviting me down. I have not yet made it, but I've heard good things about Salivo. So
it's excellent. I would rate it number one in Saratoga.
Yeah, very good. All right, let's get into Breeders' Cup. And as I say, you've been there, and I always like to ask this question for folks who are popping around the backstretch, watching workouts and whatnot. Any buzz horses this year?
You know, you don't get as many buzz horses for the Breeders' Cup as you do the Kentucky Derby, just because of sheer volume. You know, there are so many horses training at Santa Anita that it's hard just to focus on one or two. If you could pick out a buzz horse just from the way they're training, and it's no surprise, it would probably be Dennis's Moment. But the two-year-old trained by Dale Romans, owned by the Albaugh family stable that runs in the juvenile. He typically works like dynamite, and he's looked fantastic here as well.
And one thing, I was talking buzz horses a little bit earlier as well, and I said, you know, usually we think of buzz horses as maybe like the second level, second tier. And I think this year, the first tier, all the workout reports. Mattoli had that great gate workout. Chancelot, I think, has looked well. So it seems like the first tier horses are working well. So they don't necessarily translate to that kind of quote-unquote buzz kind of definition.
Yeah, exactly. And what you hear sometimes when you come is that such and such a horse is not training well.
Yeah.
And that can sometimes be more valuable than a horse that is training well, especially if they're one of the favorites in a race. You can throw them out, key on some of the other horses. But unfortunately, this year, I really haven't heard a lot about horses that are training well. I know that there is a clocker who I respect very much, who shall remain nameless, who is not particularly high on the way Eight Rings has been training.
Okay.
So maybe that could be of benefit to some people. But if Eight Rings wins, you didn't hear it. You didn't hear it from me.
All right, very
I'm just
good.
Passing it on. I'm just passing it on. I'm a conduit.
I hear you. Another thing that I picked up from the transcript on the conference call, and I've heard some conversations about this. I talked to John White maybe a month or so ago, and he was kind of alluding to it at that point. Obviously, with things going the way they were out at Santa Anita, they've changed up the surface a little bit. And it may play into the horses that either are based out in Southern California or at least have been kind of training out there for a while now as compared to the West Coast horses. So is the track surface a focus of conversation over the last few days?
It is definitely a focus of conversation among horse players.
Yeah.
I've been on this bandwagon now for at least the last couple of months leading up to the Breeders' Cup as saying that this is something that we're going to have to watch very carefully on Breeders' Cup weekend to see how the Eastern horses, the horses that have not had the benefit of training at Santa Anita, are going to come in and handle this racetrack surface. It's been described by trainers as being uncommonly heavy. It sounds kind of weird, but they say just pick up a handful of it, and if you've been at racetracks around the country, you'll feel how much heavier it is than a normal dirt racetrack, and consequently, therefore, more tiring. But when I talk to trainers about it, when I talk to California trainers in particular, say, hey, do you think your horses have an advantage having been out here training on this track? I haven't found a trainer yet that told me that they thought it was an advantage. So we'll see, but it's definitely something that I'm going to be keeping a close eye on.
Yeah, interesting. Love to have your opinion. I think everybody is looking forward to the sprint. Obviously, just by definition, the Classic is the highlight of the weekend, but I think the most anticipated race is the sprint. Imperial Hint, Mattoli, Chancelot, who all ran super right up here in our neighborhood at Saratoga, but Catalina Cruiser, based out there, provides another contender. What are your thoughts on the sprint?
Mattoli is such a good horse, and when he is on his A game, he obviously is a very difficult horse to beat, and he's obviously training very well also. But the way the race looks like to me that it's going to shape up is you're going to have Mattoli and Chancelot throwing it down right from the start. Mattoli's got the inside post position, so they really have no other options with him, and Chancelot is a one-dimensional speed horse. And so I think it's going to be one of those scenarios where you get a first quarter mile and, you know, 21-1 in the Breeders' Cup sprint. And if that transpires, if both those horses break as expected and run as expected, it's possible that Imperial Hint could be sitting there in the garden spot. He could be sitting there in third, just a length and a half, 2 lengths back, tracking those two. And we've all seen what Imperial Hint can do at Saratoga and some other places when he gets an advantageous trip. So on paper, I respect Mattoli tremendously, and it wouldn't surprise me if he hung on to win anyway. But I think Imperial Hint's going to get the trip.
I'm right in Catalina your camp.
Cruiser, I'm a little worried about Catalina Cruiser being able to keep up. I think he would have had a better chance at the dirt mile than in a sprint, but we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'm in your camp. I've liked Mattoli all year long, but I'm looking for Imperial Hint to maybe repeat what we saw in the Vanderbilt up at Saratoga, which I think would bode well on Saturday. Let me ask you this. Midnight Bijou in the Distaff, Sister Charlie in the Turf. They're both undefeated this year. Are they potential signals? Omaha Beach in the Dirt Mile has gotten some buzz there. Are there any potential singles or horses that maybe you would say, hey, bettors can maybe lean in this direction on Saturday?
Of those, I would say, and this might be a little different from what your normal opinion would be, I would say Sister Charlie would be my choice as a single. Even if Magical had come over and had run in the Filly and Mare Turf, I still think Sister Charlie would have been the one to beat. In fact, if you look about a week ago when Magical was supposedly coming, and you look at all the European bookmakers in their early lines, you know, you can take betting over there early, every one of the European bookmakers that I looked at, and I looked at seven of them, had Sister Charlie as favorite over Magical. And she's just so good, and she's so good right now. And, you know, she's going for a second win in a row. She has lost her pacemaker. Thais has been scratched by order of the veterinarian, so she won't have her rabbit, so to speak, and the pace, therefore, won't be quite as advantageous for Sister Charlie. But she was able to win last year anyway on giving ground despite a slow pace, and she's just so good. I don't think it's going to really matter all that much. Fleeting, the filly owned by Coolmore, trained by Aidan O'Brien, has had a couple of troubled trips in her last two. They're going to ride her forwardly away from there and try to get a good position and try to get the jump on Sister Charlie. But I just think Sister Charlie is too good. You mentioned Midnight Bijou. Obviously, have a tremendous amount of respect for her, and she is going to be a short price favorite, probably the shortest price favorite in the Breeders' Cup. But there's one thing I'm concerned about Midnight Bijou, and it's not so much about her, but it's about the way the race is likely to be run. If you look at the horse, if you look at that race from a pace perspective, the other trainers in the race seem to be conceding the early lead to Serengeti Empress. And when Serengeti Empress is allowed an uncontested early lead, she becomes a complete bear on the front end. She's been that way her entire career. And in her all of her most recent races, she has been disadvantaged by very contentious pace battles. At a mile, at seven furlongs, in the Cotillion last time, they absolutely sent Jaywalk from the gate to try to get the early lead, which they did. In this particular case, if Serengeti Empress is cruising along on a length and a half or two-length lead, and they're going in reasonable fractions, she could be troublesome for Midnight Bijou in the stretch, in my opinion.
Her second to Kafefi in the test was amazing, that she just fought and fought and fought. I was going to ask you if you had a clever horse on the card, and at 12-1 on the morning line, would Serengeti Empress be the clever horse?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's it.
Absolutely. I think she's a legitimate wire-to-wire candidate. The only thing that concerns me about her, and it's the same thing that concerns Tom Amos, and you always have concerns with these horses, right? You can always play point-counterpoint.
Sure.
But she has had a lot of tough races in succession. And when you look at the Cotillion, yeah, she was beaten to the early lead by Jaywalk, but a lot of people thought she was fast enough to beat Jaywalk to the lead, and she didn't. And so the only concern with her might be if she's a little over the top. But Amos says that she's training exceptionally well, and he sees no signs visibly, not that you always do, but he sees no signs visually that she is anything less than 100%.
Yeah, very good. Let's move on to the Breeders' Cup Classic and get some thoughts there. I handicapped and I put McKenzie on top. I just kind of feel like, yeah, only 2 wins and 6 starts in the 4 seconds. But I think he's just, in this year of 2019, the best older horse. The question mark is going to be the mile and a quarter. A late, very proven at a mile and a quarter. She becomes an interesting storyline in there. I couldn't really have her up too far in my mix, though. I thought Vino Rosso off the win in the Gold Cup earlier this year at Santa Anita was interesting. And Code of Honor down in the third spot for me because he's just coming in very good form off the Travers and the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And Yoshida for Belmont, also interesting. I think it's an intriguing race in the year where, again, nobody has really taken a stranglehold on that older handicap division, but what did you see in the Classic?
I think it's an intriguing race as well, Seth, from a lot of different standpoints. I like Code of Honor, and let me tell you why. If Mike Smith was still on McKenzie, I would like McKenzie. But this whole Mike Smith off jockey switch thing it bothers me. From one primary standpoint, Baffert did not like the way Mike rode McKenzie in the Awesome Again. I thought it was an excellent ride. Jerry Bailey thought it was an excellent ride. In my opinion, if you had asked Bob before the race or Mike Smith before the race, you can be one length, you can be sitting second one length behind Mongolian Groom at the quarter pole. Will you take it? They both would have jumped on it in a heartbeat, but Mongolian Groom just ran the race of his life, and McKenzie didn't run poorly, but he was just outrun. Now, Baffert wants McKenzie either on the lead or right up in the mix. You've got War of Will with blinkers on, who tends to be a bit of a keen horse anyway. And even though Mark Cassie's been saying that the blinkers doesn't make him any more keen, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. The horse has always been keen in every race in his life, and now you're going to put blinkers on him. I expect War of Will to go to the lead, and I expect the pace to be faster than it looks like it would be on paper, because if McKenzie's up there, if War of Will is up there, if Mongolian Groom is up there, if Vino Rosso is up there, then I think McKenzie, it becomes tougher for McKenzie to get the kind of trip that I think he prefers. I think he prefers an outside stalking trip, and I'm just afraid that that's not what he's going to get. I think he's the best horse, but the way the race is likely to be run and the way the pace is likely to shape up, I think it's going to favor a closer like Code of Honor.
Does that put him in not in the mix? He's already in the mix. Would that a Breeders' Cup Classic, I think, would be a slam dunk for a three-year-old Eclipse, right? One of my questions that I was going to ask you was what are your thoughts on the three-year-old Eclipse at this point? Because I was surprised after the Jockey Club Gold Cup, the number of people who said, oh, Code of Honor is now at the front of the class. To me, after the Jockey Club Gold Cup, it was kind of a dead heat. But after what Maximum Security did last weekend, I think now it's very intriguing given what he potentially will do in the Cigar Mile. But does a Breeders' Cup Classic just trump everything if Code of Honor wins?
I agree. I think it does. I think if Code of Honor can put together a decent effort in the Kentucky Derby, even though he was behind Maximum Security, with his win in the Dwyer, with his win in the Travers, with his win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, with the win in the Breeders' Cup Classic, to me it becomes a slam dunk.
Yeah.
Even if Maximum Security comes back and wins the Cigar Mile.
And as I say, I was surprised by the number of people who put Code of Honor in front after the Jockey Club Gold Cup, because I thought it was kind of given the DQ in the Kentucky Derby, the DQ in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. But it'll be interesting to see what Code of Honor does on Saturday in the Breeders' Cup Classic for sure. What does a close-up maybe second do for him?
That's the point I was just going to make is, what if he runs poorly?
Yeah,
what if Code
yeah.
of Honor runs poorly and then – let's say off the board, and then Maximum Security comes back and wins the Cigar Mile. What happens then?
Yeah,
I think it goes to Maximum Security.
Yeah,
but you know, it's an interesting mix. A second place finish with Code of Honor. I don't know. I think we might have to look in and wait for Maximum Security to run again and see how he does.
Yeah,
but it's certainly fascinating, isn't it?
Interesting. And the horse of the year potential in a number of different races. We mentioned the undefeated horses. Didn't mention one of the other great races on Saturday, the Filly and Mayor Sprint. Covfefe and Come Dancing will throw it down. I think it's a great weekend, obviously, but a good Saturday as well. Wish you and everybody at NBC a lot of good luck on the weekend. Looking forward to the broadcast. And, Randy, I really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Seth. Always enjoy talking to you. Take care.
Very good. Randy Moss, NBC Sports. And again, NBC kicks off today, 3:30. NBC Sports Network has the early portion of the Breeders' Cup. And then at 8 o'clock, they'll go over to NBC proper for the Classic. So thanks again to Randy Moss for joining us. We'll take a break when we come back. Steve Bick, again, he's been out there all week with the radio show, catching the workouts and talking to some of the players. So we'll get to him right after this break. Please stay tuned.
To find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing, Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup winning your in series.
To win one of these challenge series is a way that we kind of map out our schedule throughout the year with our horses.
If you win one of the challenge races, you have a very good horse.
The King George, which is our winning in race, provides the top middle distance horse in Europe. We saw Highland Reel running both races.
We know when we show up at the Breeders' Cup, we've got the world to beat, not just everybody in the United States. Breeders' Cup Challenge, win, and you're in.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Didn't mention either on the Handicappers Report earlier, the mandatory pay was yesterday at Aqueduct, $130,000 on a 20-cent ticket, 20-cent increment ticket. I'm guessing with the pool, what, 17 or 18 tickets perhaps? You would have to think the way the sequence played out, it kind of fell apart early. The wound up with a $65 winner. You'd have to think if this was a regular Thursday somebody might have won. Either would have carried over the entire pool and paid to five, or somebody might have had the shot of walking away with the entire pool because it really kind of fell apart yesterday at Aqueduct. Again, $130,000 was the payout in the Empire Six yesterday at Aqueduct. All right, let's jump back into our Breeders' Cup conversation. Again, we tape these Thursday afternoon. We played the first portion of Steve Bick yesterday and talked a little bit about the Friday action. And again, he liked sharing. He touted that nice Grand Motion horse that paid a very good price on yesterday's card. We talked some ideas for the Saturday card as well. And Steve also gives it kind of how he approaches the card. It's always good to maybe think on a big day like this where you have a budget and you've set things aside, how you do approach and kind of parse out where you're going to play and where you may be a little thinner with some of your plays. So he talks a little bit about that kind of strategy as well. So up next, Sirius and XM radio host, also my co-host during the summer on Sunday mornings on Loose on the Lead, Steve Bick. Let's shift our attention to Saturday, and you've kind of alluded to it already. Let's talk a little bit about strategy. Nine Breeders' Cup races, plenty of pick plays. You talked, as I say, you alluded to your trifecta kind of key where you put a big price underneath. Talk a little bit about that and how you approach Saturday in the nine Breeders' Cup races with plenty of opportunities. You got to parse out the bankroll correctly. What are your thoughts as you head into a day with those nine Breeders' Cup races?
Well, for starters, if you're a multi-race player, on my plays, I've already written up Friday. I gotta fill in some blanks, and I'll flesh it out a little bit more this afternoon, and I'll also put the foundation of Saturday's selection together this afternoon. The exercise I went through was creating kind of a demarcation of what the race represents. Each race represents for multi-race play. And I designated, you know, some as spread races, others as narrow, you know, places where you could tiptoe, you know, potentially even single, you know, depending on your budget. If you've got a limited budget, you're obviously looking for singles, Sister Charlie, Bricks and Mortar. Some people will probably feel confident in singling Midnight Bisou. So you know, you identify the races and you know, what they represent in terms of approach as you go through. And, you know, with nine races, obviously you got seven chances for pick threes, for instance, 50 cents pick three. I mean, you can go five by two, and it's a $10 bet.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go in with $100 this weekend and, you know, trying to get a score, and you could play rolling doubles, you could play rolling pick threes. And, you know, you don't, you know, the people who are saying, well, I really don't have, you know, bankroll to enjoy this. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Even if you're limited to $50 for the whole weekend, you could pick some spots and roll some pick threes, play some doubles and, you know, go three by two in doubles. And it's only a $3 play. I mean, if you find yourself one price shot mixed in somewhere, you're going to have a profitable day or a profitable weekend. So, for instance, it starts with the Filly and Mare Sprint. And, you know, Filly and Mare Sprint's not a big field, and there's going to be people that are going to gravitate to Covfefe, even as a single. I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. So I didn't have a designation as either a narrow or a spread race. It's sort of in between. You know, you might approach it and think, okay, I can get away with Covfefe and with Come Dancing. If you don't believe that one of the two obvious players, if you think that there's a potential for this to overheat, well, then you're going to look for, you know, either a stalker or even a closer. I mean, Dawn the Destroyer became a horse that some people got interested in with the potential for this race to boil over into a collapse. Bella Fina on a turnback. So, you know, I didn't designate this race in one direction or the other because it's an individual preference or determination based on how you handicap it. You look at the Turf Sprint. The Turf Sprint, to me, is a spread race. I very frequently in Turf Sprints like to make a stand, and I've had you know, some success doing that, and other times, you know, have been frustrated. But, you know, Turf Sprints, now here at five furlongs on the grass, they're not as much fun as the downhill course, where I think you could make more determination as to a horse to make a stand with. So in this particular edition, I think you do have to look around. Pure Sensation and the two horses of Rusty Arnold, Eddie Haskell from Mark Glatt, Peter Miller has got both Ohm and the two-time defending winner, Stormy Liberal, and Belvoir Bay, Peter Miller with three in here. So this is a difficult spot. Imprimis for Joe Orsino, who hasn't really been the same horse since the Dubai try. You know, you poke around here. You could think about the two horses coming in from New York, Sheki Shabazz and Final Frontier. I mean, to me, this is a spread race. Then you go.
That's the toughest race, and you named about 10 horses. You didn't name mine. I'm going to go for Leinster to get back to that Troy performance.
Well, and, you know, it was funny. We were talking earlier. Mark Mustafa, who's a big contest player, the BCBC, and Rick Hammerly after we got off the air. And Hammer's a proponent for years of hitting the all button in certain spots. And, you know, this is the exercise about spread and you know, the problem, of course, with the all button is if you hit it and, you know, you end up with the 4-1 favorite, you feel stupid. But all you have to do is look at a race like Bar of Gold winning at Del Mar at what, 70-1 or whatever price she was. So, you know, when you get the spread races, the other spread races, the bile. I know some people, Brad Free was on this morning with me, and Brad is making Circus Maximus his best bet. I think the mile is much more complicated. You know, the Classic is obviously a spread race to a certain degree. Narrow races, I mentioned the two Chad Browns. You can go fairly narrow in with Fist of Charlie and Bricks and Mortar. The sprint is sort of in between because there's probably, you know, three horses, maybe four, that seem much more likely to win than the other half of the field, between Vitoli and Chancelot and Imperial Hint. It feels like people are kind of coming down on one side or the other with Matoli and Chancelot. I think Catalina Cruiser gets a beautiful trip behind the speed. So this is a race that, you know, again, depending on your view, there are people who are going to be married to Matoli, and you're going to hear people handicap and say, if Matoli wins, I'm going to have a good day. So to me, it's an in-between race. So this is the exercise. I mean, I would go through and, you know, as you just said, Seth, about the first sprint, look at races and count up how many horses you think can win. And those are, if it's a number above 3.5, it's a race you need to spread. If you think that, you know, Sister Charlie and maybe Fleeting, or Sister Charlie and Iridessa, Sister Charlie and Basilica, you know, that's obviously a place you can go Darrow. So, you know, get a template and a foundation for the way that, you know, you think the day is going to unfold, and it'll make it so much easier for you to build your ticket. And, you know, chances are most of you that are watching, you've done your handicapping. Spend the rest of the time now building your plays and figuring out whether it's making a line and what prices you think horses are going to be and at what price you think a horse might be a prime play. You know, because one of the things about this 2 days that always amazes me when Paul McNeese and I recap next week, you're going to look at charts and you're going to see horses that you missed during the course of the action. And you're going to say, oh my God, how did Firenze Fire go off at 19-1? And Firenze Fire was the horse that when you were handicapping, you may have thought, you know, he could have done a good trip in here and then finish. You know, I don't necessarily love him, but, you know, think about that and think about horses that you would bet at nice numbers and be really cognizant of the board. And even if it's just a $5 win punch, be very cognizant of that. I hit Bar of Gold. Gabby Gaudette and I were standing track aside. I didn't have her on any multi-race tickets. And she went by us, and I turned to Gabby. I said, look at, oh, my God. And she says, I just talked about Bar of Gold and how good she looked. I grabbed my phone. I put $5 across. And it ended up being a huge difference in the weekend. So, you know, have an idea of what prices you would play horses and try to be aware. If you've done this kind of pre-work and you've built a template and the blueprint for your day, it'll make it that much easier for you to notice when a horse that you like is going off at a price you can't believe.
And speaking of that, you talked about the Breeders' Cup Mile earlier. I'm going to go with the two ladies, Scott Stormy and Uni. Circus Maximus is in my mix as well. But we did a seminar here on Wednesday night, and I said, and you and I were talking before we went on the air, Luke Cullen is interesting to me. I didn't put that one in the mix. That may be one that I'll look up and put that $10 to win on, because the 12-1 morning line, if that holds up or it goes up higher, Luke Cullen looks just like a horse that really is getting good right now. And if the price holds up, I will play Luke Cullen in some fashion. But as I say, we were talking before we went on the air, and you like Luke Cullen a little bit too.
Well, Got Stormy will be my top selection, because I've latched on to her early in the year and think the world of her. And be cognizant that this race, it surprisingly does not have a ton of pace. And so she will be able to set up shop, you know, certainly drew perfectly in the six hole. And, you know, she can set up behind whoever wants to lead and then, you know, apply pressure whenever it's appropriate. But Uni, you know, coming from a little bit further back, I think the filly and the mare absolutely are central to this. I respect Circus Maximus, but I'm not bending over backwards to use him. Lakulin is a horse that's bubbled up on the radar for me, and then the draw. You know what I reminded people of today on the radio, when you look at the pre-entry and you look at the horses that you expect to get pre-entered, then they give you the body of the field and the horses that are not selected in. When Luke Cullen was as far down the list as he was, you mentally start to think, oh, okay, well, I don't have to worry about LeCoulin. Then he gets in the race, and you haven't really applied his potential to the entire outlook. So, you know, kind of reorient yourself to the horses that ended up getting into field that at first it didn't look like they were going to be involved in. And you know, that also includes horses that made decisions that were kind of counter to what you expected. You know, for instance, Catalina Cruiser going for the sprint instead of the dirt mile. And, you know, he ends up getting, I think, a better situation than he would have gotten in the dirt mile, even though the sprint on paper is the tougher race. So, you know, each individual horse and the individual circumstance will determine, you know, what you do next and how you bet the race. But Lukulin's a horse that you realize when you kind of fine-tooth it, that race, the last couple of races he's run, he's at the same level as the best of these in the world right now. So, yeah, absolutely. You get Luis Saez, you get, you know, kind of a behind-the-vanguard pace-pressing trip, and why not? And he's going to be, that 12-1 should hold. There's a horse on the outside that is also kind of bubbled up on radar screen, Tay Gammon, for James Tate. And I asked yesterday, Dick Luck and Gina Bryce about James Tate. And they said that a very serious guy that isn't just coming here, you know, for the experience. As it happens, Tay Gammon ends up with Frankie Dettori. So even though he's marooned out there in the 13 hole, Dettori has a tendency to be able to overcome that kind of problem. And Tay Gammon's going to be a very big price. So I'm going to key off of Got Stormy. Going to probably go 6, 2, 11, 13. And I'll protect Circus Maximus certainly in multis and so forth. But there's at least, no matter how you look at this, there's at least one price people should latch on to and include. Yesterday, both Nick Luck and Tina Bryce made a case for Suédois, that Suédois is well-positioned from the one-all with Castellano for a ground-saving run to come running late. The horses that want to close into a pace, I don't know if they're going to get much of a setup. That's the one rub. But don't be afraid to include prices in your mile play.
Steve, as always, appreciate the conversation. Got to wrap it up, but looks like a great weekend with a lot of great storylines. One that fell apart, I was really looking forward to Magical versus Sister Charlie. We won't get that, but Covfefe versus Come Dancing. The sprint is clearly winding up to be the highlight of the weekend as far as the anticipation. Chancelot, Imperial Hint, Matoli, Catalina Cruiser. A late will be an interesting story in the classic. Just before we let you go, any other buzz as far as stories we should be paying attention to this week?
You know, you got a lot of horses that are running their last races that are going to change hands.
you know, Tuesday and Wednesday at Fasig and at Keeneland, and in the bloodstock market. You know, you've got some, you know, some individual stories, certain horsemen, Ron Moquette with Whitmore, you know, on the fence for quite a while and then made the decision to come. He's, you know, certainly Whitmore is going to get a chance to close into a pace. Mark Glatt, who's a personal favorite of mine, who's a you know, from a longstanding family from the Pacific Northwest of horsemen, his father Ron. Mark Glatt is a terrific horseman. If Eddie Haskell wins the turf sprint, you know, that'll be a wonderful story. One horse I haven't mentioned, you discussed, you know, what was a potential for Magical versus Sister Charlie, a horse that I cannot get away from, that I latched on to, you know, well in advance of coming here, was Fanny Logan. John Gosden is as good a horseman as there is in the world, and a three-year-old filly in this spot, Fanny Logan reminds me of Queen's Trust 3 years ago when she beat the Lady Eli on the wire. Last 2 mornings got a chance to look at Fanny Logan. She didn't draw great, you know, from the 12 hole, but she gets the Tory. And Fanny Logan, a horse that every bit of 15-1. I don't know if she can upset Sister Charlie, but she could be a really nice price boost. You know, I'm going to keep her around second and third with Sister Charlie and the other obvious players, and probably have a saber win bet. But Fanny Logan's a horse, maybe my favorite horse on Saturday to play around with.
Very good. As I say, we got to wrap it up, Steve. But before we go, just a tip of the cap again. Great job out there this week in the lead up. Lots of great information from the folks live from Santa Anita, Sirius and XM. And we'll catch up with you for some recap on Sunday morning.
Sounds great. Good luck, everybody. And make sure your accounts your account is funded. Don't wait. Make sure well in advance. And don't get frustrated. You can pull the fat out of the fire in the classic. Several years ago, I had a rough 2 days. And literally walking to the track apron, I loved the way Fort Larned looked heading to the track. I was with Dina. I said, let's go here. I want to make a bet. And I keep Fort Larned, hit the try, and ended up having a great Breeders' Cup, even though I must have been 0-13 going in. And literally, I mean, it was just a frustrating. Don't get frustrated. And even if you don't hit anything, these are just 2 days. On Sunday, the money that you make at Aqueduct, it'll be the same value that the money could have been that you made Friday and Saturday.
Yeah, that's a great point. All you need is one if it's the right one. Steve, appreciate it. We'll talk again.
Thanks, Seth.
Steve Bick, Sirius and XM's At the Races. Let's shift. All right. Thanks to Steve for taking the time. Again, Fanny Logan, an interesting long shot he tossed out there. Keep that one in mind. Breaking news. Within the last 20 minutes or so, it's hit Twitter. Imperial Hint out of the Breeders' Cup sprint. A vet scratch. Trainer quoted. Mike Welch has a tweet quoting trainer Louis Carvajal. He's trained perfectly sound, but he is tender to the touch around the coronet band, and the state vets made the decisions to take him out. So if you had Imperial Hint in your mix, as I did, I had him on top in the sprint, you're going to have to adjust your plays. Imperial Hint scratched from the sprint. All right, we'll jump in now again, continue our conversation with Nick Luck. Nick, of course, based in Europe. He's the European analyst, essentially, for NBC Sports on these big days. So we talked with him a little bit yesterday about Friday's Euros. We continued the conversation this morning about the Europeans, or some of the intriguing Europeans, on the Saturday Breeders' Cup card. So up next, Nick Luck from NBC Sports. Let's shift our attention now to Saturday. Let's go right backwards from the Breeders' Cup turf. And the Breeders' Cup turf, I played around and I threw Anthony Van Dyke in my mix. But again, it's another race that has a group of Europeans. Mount Everest is interesting. Old Persian folks have talked about that I've been talking to this week. As I say, Anthony Van Dyke, to me, coming out of the third most recently behind Magical, was the one I tilted towards. But what are your thoughts on some of the Euros in the Breeders' Cup turf?
Yeah, I narrowly favor Old Persian over Anthony Van Dyke. I think they could run 1-2, notwithstanding the presence of bricks and mortar in here. Anthony Van Dyke, I can't see him being out of the board. I think there's enough pace in the race that he he should get a sit in third or fourth, something like that, and then try and run the sting out of his rival. He's reportedly had the perfect preparation for this race, which I think is important when it comes to looking at balance by horses. And Aidan O'Brien has won this race a bunch of times before, so I can't see him being out of the frame. Do I think he's a brilliant horse? No, I don't think he is. I think he's a very good horse. I think he can win, but I don't think he's a brilliant horse. In Old Persian, I think we've got a horse with at least his ability if he has a going day. I mean, his best going days so far have been York last year, Maidan in spring, and it wasn't a bad time in Canada last time, even though he didn't beat much. And I think the common denominator for those performances is fast ground and 1.5 miles. And I think he is a horse who can run fast over 1.5 miles. And therefore, I would just give him the edge at the likely odds.
Curious what your thoughts are on Mount Everest, another 3-year-old from Aidan O'Brien.
Well, the most compelling evidence in Mount Everest's favour are his pedigree and his being relatively unexposed. He's by Galileo out of six perfections, 2003 Breeders' Cup Mile winner, so he's perfectly bred for the job. And there's every chance he can improve on what he's shown in a truncated 3-year-old season. But whether he can improve this much, I don't know. I've tried to fashion a case for him because of how he's bred, but it's very difficult to think that he can pose a significant threat to either his stable companion or Britain North or Old Persian.
Let's move on to the Breeders' Cup Mile. Again, a good contingent of Euros in here. The two that I found interesting were Soudois and Circus Maximus, but as I say, there are some others in here that maybe attract some attention as well. What are your thoughts on the Europeans in the Breeders' Cup Mile?
Deep contingent, but not an easy one to pick your way through. It's a very trappy race, and not one you could have maximum confidence in. Circus Maximus will be the shortest price of the European horses, seeking to give the Niarchos family a seventh success in the Breeders' Cup Mile, which is pretty extraordinary in itself. He's a horse who's more of a winding, grinding miler than a horse with a sparkling turn of foot. And I just wonder whether this is going to be up his street, just the dimensions of the track and the way the races play out. I'm just wondering whether that will quite suit him. I think he'll have to be ridden handily, but they put blinkers back on him, which suggests that's the way they're going to play it. He's a talented horse. He's got the form figure in what looks an open race. But just this question of whether he's ideally suited to the demands of an American two-turn grass mile race, and I'm not quite sure that he is. But you mentioned Swedois, who's in the one hole. Johnny Velasquez takes the ride. He's a smashing old horse. It's hard to believe he's going to get any better at the age of 8, but he looks in great condition, and I can certainly see him hitting the board at a decent price. Of the slightly less heralded European horses, like Space Traveller, who Danny Tuthobe has chosen to ride over Swedois, horses like Space Traveller and Hey Gamma, they've got form over 7 furlongs, which makes me think that they might have the tactical speed to take a hand here if they adapt to it. And Hey Gamma, of course, for all he's in Fox 13, has the assistance of Frankie Dettori, so that's clearly a big plus. Nothing would surprise me in this race, nothing at all.
Yeah, it again, is a nice competitive event. Breeders' Cup, Filly and Mare Turf, maybe less competitive. I think everybody will tilt towards Sister Charlie. I was really disappointed because this was going to be one of the big stories and big races for me if Magical came over. If had Magical versus Sister Charlie, we would have that European, the Ryder Cup kind of a thing in play here. But Magical winds up with a little fever and is retired. So Sister Charlie, as I say, will take a lot of action. But of the Euros, Villamarina attracts me. The win on Arc Day over at Longchamp, nice gutsy win there. So I'm tilting towards putting her in the mix. But I think, again, there's a number of competitive Euros. Your thoughts on the Filly and Mare Turf?
Yeah, I think she's a shot for sure. But that was a hard race on very soft ground. It's a different kettle of fish this time round, and that would worry me a little bit. Fleeting has been the unluckiest filly in training, but is she making her own misfortune by just not having the tactical pace to get into the holes when a rider needs to get her into the holes? Is that going to undo her here, I wonder? I think that Sister Charlie will win, broadly speaking. If there's a European horse that might run really well at a huge price, and I mean a huge price, it's just wonderful, who I think wants every bit of this 10 now and hasn't really had a chance to show what she's capable of at it. She's not straightforward. She carries her head a little bit high. You always wonder whether she's going through with an effort. But when you consider that she's 10 times the price of Iridesa, that you can make a pretty good case for, yet she looked like she might beat Iridesa for half a furlong at Leopardstown on Irish Champions weekend, then You know, I'm sort of interested in her at a massive price. I say she's not that straightforward, but you know, I sort of hark back to years where Aidan O'Brien had one or two second strings run big in this race. I remember Long Crest doing it. She looked to have a kind of weird profile for it, but running massive races this back in 2003 behind Islington, and I just get a sneaking suspicion that she might run better than her odds suggest.
Very good. Nick, before we let you go, let me put you on the spot for a second. Your most likely European winner.
I think the percentage call is to say Arizona, because he's got the clearest class edge over any of his rivals. The horse I sort of have the sweetest spot for, I suppose, is Old Persian in the turf. And as I say, I've hopefully given a few positive thoughts on one or two horses that at much, much bigger prices, you know, the spread wires and the just wonderful and so forth.
Nick, as always, appreciate the visit. And as I say, helping folks out with the Europeans, which are always a little bit of a puzzle around Breeders' Cup time. But wish you a lot of good luck, you and the NBC team. You got a couple of nice days of coverage. And as I say, appreciate the visit. And we'll talk again.
Great to chat. That's it.
NBC Sports' Nick Luck giving us some thoughts on some of the Europeans on the Friday and Saturday cards. Nick Luck for joining us, NBC Sports. Top of the show, we had Randy Moss from NBC. Again, NBC coverage today begins at 3:30 on NBC Sports Network. They'll have the early Breeders' Cup races, and then things go over to NBC proper at 8 o'clock for the Classic today. So again, thanks to Nick Luck and Randy Moss, and thanks also to our buddy Steve Bick for joining us as well. That's going to wrap things up for this edition of Racing Across America. They're actually underway with Talking Horses at Aqueduct, so we'll jump right into that. They have an early post time today at noon. I think it's noon tomorrow as well, so keep that in mind for Aqueduct over the weekend. Again, Bet 100, Get 100 continues today. Today's your last day. Jump in and take advantage of that nice bonus cash if you're signing up for a brand new account. That's today. You have to jump in for that. Don't forget tomorrow at the Clubhouse Racebook. It's an NFL Sunday. Watch all the games and catch all the racing action every Sunday throughout the football season. Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Again, if you're on the bankroll team, oh, Bounty Bet. Oh, yeah, great. I didn't mention that yet today. And that you definitely want to jump in on. Play the late pick five today with your Capital OTB bet account, and you're in line for all or part of that $2,000 plus bounty. That's a special Breeders' Cup edition of the Bounty Bet today. Play the late pick five at Santa Anita with your Capital OTB bet account. Also, keep in mind if you're on the bankroll team, Sully and I will play today. I have an early part of the card, $1,000, which I have to adjust a little bit now with the Imperial Hint news. Sully will have the later part of the day, $1,000. But if you're on the bankroll team, you should have received an email. You can check the website. But if you're on the bankroll team, you have to wager today to continue to participate. So keep that in mind. All right. Going to wrap things up for this edition of the Handicappers Report, for Racing Across America. Handicappers Report was in the rearview mirror already. And, oh, I should mention one more time, if you didn't see 10 or 15 minutes ago, I mentioned within the last half hour, Imperial Hint is out of the Breeders' Cup Sprint, a vet scratch early this morning. Imperial Hint out, so a notable scratch on the Saturday Breeders' Cup card. All right, going to wrap things up. Tomorrow I'll be back in at 10 o'clock with Racing Across America. We will recap the Breeders' Cup action, so I hope you tune back in for that. Back in less than an hour, actually, with the 12 noon post time at Aqueduct with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you in a few.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.